Hello, and welcome to the Bookshelf Conversation, the podcast segment of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors, artists, musicians, filmmakers, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture, because that's our slogan. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. If you ask most hardcore baseball fans what the year 1969 brings to mind, I'm guessing that a lot will refer to the Miracle Mets. I'm also guessing that a few will think about the Major League Baseball celebration of their centennial, beginning with the Cincinnati Red Stockings in 1869. But I doubt many will refer to one of the biggest baseball books of all time, the Macmillan Baseball Encyclopedia, which turns 50 this year as well. Well, we had the chance to talk to Rick Wolf, who is one of the editors of that book, three editions actually, and it's a fascinating look at what goes into putting together a massive project like that and how, unfortunately, time has taken its toll on such books, such reference books as the Baseball Encyclopedia. Rick Wolf, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you.
So, we don't often celebrate anniversaries of books, but this year is the 50th anniversary of the Baseball Encyclopedia, which for me personally was the first big book, literally big book, I ever bought. I mean, at the time, and we're talking about the sixth edition, which I believe came out in 1985, it was $40. So $40 in 1985, for me, that was a lot of money. And when I say big, I mean it weighs in at about 5 pounds. It's over 2,700 pages. And this was done in a pre-internet era. So, what is your connection with the Baseball Encyclopedia?
Well, I had the distinct pleasure of editing three editions, and I believe the 85 was one of them. And you're absolutely right. The book usually ran about just close or shy of 3,000 pages. It was the proverbial doorstop, people would call it. It weighed, as you said, 5, maybe even more, 7-8 pounds. It's big. And it was a huge, huge cash cow for Macmillan, which published it since its inception in 1969. And it would come out every 3 years because, again, all pre-internet, this was all about having to total up stats and get all the records straight and update all the biographical stuff on the players. But it was a huge success from the day it was first published in 69 right up until its very end. And, you know, just let's discuss that for a second. The book sort of inexplicably sort of stopped publishing. Macmillan was basically, when Robert Maxwell, a British financier, owned Macmillan Publishing, and when he passed away quite suddenly, the Macmillan Publishing Unit, which included the Baseball Encyclopedia, was absorbed by Simon & Schuster, who apparently didn't know what to do with the Baseball Encyclopedia. They sold the intellectual property to John Wiley & Sons. They didn't know what to do with it either, and to this day, one of the great mysteries of the world is how come nobody's never published the Baseball Encyclopedia again. And of course, they got caught up with nowadays everything's instantaneous with baseballreference.com. But, you know, as you well know, and people who are of an age who grew up with the Baseball Encyclopedia, they really loved just losing themselves in the stats and the nicknames and everything else that the book afforded.
Now, when you say you edited it, exactly what does that mean for a book like this?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the book was one of the very first books that was put together with a database, if you would. Now, again, a computer database in 1969, again, that was long before I got involved in it. But it was basically put together by an army of researchers, baseball fans, who love stats. And they poured through every box score they could find from the beginning of the major leagues and totaled up, you know, who was hitting, who was in the lineup, position players, the pitchers, and so on and so forth. And every so often, you know, I would get, well, in those days there was a new group just coming onto the scene called the Society for American Baseball Research. It's known today as SABRE. And these fellows basically would send myself and my my colleague, Ken Samuelson, who worked on the book with me, occasional updates. You have the wrong birth date for this player or the wrong death date or you have the wrong stat. And we would go back and have to research to find out whether or not these challenges were correct or incorrect. And, of course, we had to include every year all the new stats from the previous season, which included, of course, new players called up for the minors. We also assigned, if the player deserved it, if he had a nickname. You know, people forget in the baseball encyclopedia, there was if a player had an unusual nickname, we always included it. And over the years, you know, people have come to love the nicknames, particularly from players who over time have been forgotten. So, I mean, people remember Jim Mudcat Grant. Nobody ever called him Jim Grant. He was Mudcat Grant, a great pitcher. And there were nicknames like that all over the place. I mean, there was just, let me see if I can think of a few others here. There was a fellow named Arlie Johnson, whose name was Death to Flying Things. Mm-hmm. How he got the nickname, I have no idea. But the book was all full of these nicknames from the, you know, back in the early 1900s, and it was extraordinary. So we loved doing that stuff. So,
what was the criteria for inclusion, if any?
Well, if you got into any major league game for, you know, one at bat, one inning in the field, one appearance on the mound, you got in. That was the main criteria. So, I mean, actually, people remember the movie, of course. That featured
Field of Dreams,
of course, when that came from W.P. Kinsella's novel, and people focused on Archibald Wright Graham or Moonlight Graham,
another great nickname,
of course, and you know, people remember the movie, and this is all true stuff. That Moonlight Graham got into a game with the New York Giants in 1905. He only got in for a half inning in the outfield. He never came to bat, but that was enough to get him into the baseball encyclopedia, and the great novelist W.P. Kinsella seized upon that reality. You would wonder, how in the world could a guy get just, you know, get into half an inning of a game, play in the outfield, never come to bat, and then never come back to the big leagues ever again? What was that like for him? And it is true that Moonlight Graham went on to become a doctor in Minnesota and had a wonderful career as a physician, but that became the basis of that movie and the book and the movie. And again, all stems back to that one minor entry in the baseball encyclopedia. You know, the book is chock full of these things. Yeah, it's a book of names and numbers, but it's all full of these unusual types of stories. I mean, people would ask me, you know, who is the greatest hitter in Major League Baseball history? And you would think, oh, well, let's see, it's Ty Cobb or Ted Williams, people like that. But no, and according to the Baseball Encyclopedia, the greatest hitter of all time was a fellow named John Pachoric, because he went 3-for-3 with 2 walks in the only major league game he played in back in 1963 for the Houston Colt 45s. So you can't do better than going 3-for-3 with 2 walks. He batted 1,000 for his career. True story, you know. That was the joy in front of the Baseball Encyclopedia.
Now, you talk about the stats. The stats in the Baseball Encyclopedia are pretty much what we would know as baseball card stats, you know, games,
yes,
runs, hits, home runs, etc.
Right.
Certainly when Total Baseball came out, and they published several editions, they had more stats. Now there's a whole other generation of metrics. So I'm just wondering, if someone were to undertake to do another physical book, how big would that be? I mean, the trim size of the book is about, I would say, and I'm bad with measurements, I would say it's 60% the trim size of the Total Baseball books.
Let's go for the record on this, because
okay,
I'm glad you asked about Total Baseball, which was obviously published as a competitor, and there were several publishers who took a run at the Baseball Encyclopedia, because quite frankly, it was the dominant, clearly the dominant book in its field, and had been for, you know, 40, 50 years. Total Baseball came out when I was running the Baseball Encyclopedia, and I was very nervous because I felt that, uh-oh, this is going to be a book that might take real that aim at us. But and it was written and published or put together by reputable people in the field like John Thorne, Pete Palmer, people like that. But once the book came out, we were amazed that they did some. They took liberties with their book that we had never seen before. For example, if they thought that in 1920, and this was the rule in those days, to win the batting crown, you had to have 100 plate appearances. That was the rule back in 1920.
100 plate appearances.
Yeah, it was something really bizarre. Uh-huh. And sure enough, it was a backup catcher with the Chicago White Sox named Bubbles Hargrave, and he had qualified for the batting crown even though he was a backup catcher. But so when Total Baseball came out, they said that was a stupid rule at the time, so we're just going to disregard that and basically find the guy who really should have won the batting crown and give it to him. Well, you can't do that.
Alternate like, facts.
you can't come out and say, you know, on further review, we think the British should have won the American Revolution. You can't do that. And so they had that kind of stuff. They had other examples that were peppered throughout the book where they had basically taken severe liberties with this stuff. And, you know, we were, like, amazed and mystified. You know, the bottom line is Total Baseball came out and it went away. It didn't do anything. It just went away. It just didn't really mount much of a challenge to the baseball encyclopedia. I recall also with Total Baseball, they left out an entire section just by a printing error. All the pitchers who had last names starting with Z, like a Jeff Zahn, for some reason that part of the book never made into Total Baseball, and it just didn't exist. So if you were Jeff Zahn, you couldn't prove you pitched in the big leagues. So these things happen all the time. But, you know, again, what really sort of spelled the end of the baseball encyclopedia clearly was the advent of computers. Stats Inc. came along early on, and they were the dominant player. And all of a sudden people would say, well, I can just go find these numbers, whether it's batting average, on-base percentage, whatever it might be, just by going online and checking it out very, you know, instantaneously. But I got to tell you, Ron, you can do that, and we all do that today, but it's not the same. It's, as you said, you grew up with a book, as did I, and something very
exactly.
glorious
yep.
about just spending a couple hours pouring through this and saying, you know, I wonder what Willie Mays did hit in his first year, or how good a pitcher was Tom Seaver out of USC. I mean, it was just a different kind of experience, which I don't think today's kids would ever come to. It's just something that's sort of frozen in time.
Well, I didn't know you're talking nostalgia and romance here.
Yes, of course. you know, but that's what it was. And I remember we would get calls, and that was the beauty in front of this. Ken and I, Ken Samuelson and I, would get phone calls. I'll never forget, we got a call from and I won't use his name because it's too embarrassing. But he called up one day and he said, you know, I pitched in the big leagues for 10 years and had some success. He was very proud of his career. But he said, I have the baseball encyclopedia, the most current edition in front of me, and my name is not listed. You clearly have left me out of your book.
Wow.
So I said to the gentleman, I said, well, I'm looking at my encyclopedia, and if you go to page 2871, you're right there. He says, what? What do you mean? I said, let me guess, you were a pitcher, right? He said, of course. So you must have looked in the players section, not in the pitchers section. And that's what happened. He was embarrassed to death.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because when I was just looking at it before, if I were a pitcher, I would take a little exception, because a pitcher is a player. Now, if you'd said batters and pitchers, that's one thing. But I can understand a pitcher's umbrage about not being considered a player.
Well, it was a decision that was made long before my time with the encyclopedia. Again, there were you know, a number of editions, but I only worked on three of them. And the rationale, I assume, was, well, if you want to do the stats correctly for batters, they have different stats than pitchers do. So rather than just from a typographical situation, it was easier to have a section for pitchers and innings pitched and strikeouts and walks and that kind of stuff, as opposed for batters, which had a much, you know, had their own stats. So that's why there were two sections. But, you know, along the way, we were very proud. We, at one point, with Sabre's help, we added a whole section about the whatever stats we could find and authenticate for the old Negro Leagues and some of the great players there. The All-American Women's Baseball League back in the war during the 40s, we had their stats. I mean, you know, it was quite a fun thing and quite a proud project to be involved in.
Now, again, we're talking about over 2,800 pages.
Yeah.
Back in the day, a lot of teams got along with like 30, 35 players per year. Now you look on Baseball Reference, it's not uncommon to find that more than 50 players have appeared in the game over the course of the season. So, are you talking about a 5,000-page book?
It would probably be certainly close to double of what it was originally. And again, we know that baseball has evolved. As you said, you know, expanded rosters and call-ups and so on and so forth due to injuries. I mean, you know, back in the day, let's face it, pitchers, they didn't have relief pitchers for many, many years. You started a game, you finished it. It was as simple as that.
And plus, there were only 16 teams for a long time.
That too, of course. So, you know, but it would be a mammoth book today. I gather what we'd probably do from a publishing perspective is we'd probably have separated into two books. We'd have one book 3,000 pages long of hitters and one book of pitchers. Now you're going to ask me, what about some of the guys today who both hit and pitch, you know, or like Babe Ruth used to do? I don't know. I guess we probably include them in both volumes. But, yeah, you couldn't do a 6,000-page book. That'd be just unwieldy, and you probably couldn't keep the binding to hold the pages.
Well, yeah, you forgot to mention that the player register is not the only part of the baseball encyclopedia.
No, you have all the records and stats up front. So, mm-hmm. You know, there is, I mean, people, again, if you could, for your listeners, if they can imagine a world before there was an internet and instant computer access, if you want to know what the record was for most strikeouts in a season, or the record for most wins in a season, or how many home runs, is there really an asterisk, you know, next to Roger Maris's name for hitting 61 home runs? Well, you need a copy of the Baseball Encyclopedia.
Yes, you have to take it off the bookshelf. You got to put it down on the table because it's too heavy to keep in your lap, and turn the pages to find this stuff. But that's part of the pleasure for, I guess, fans of a certain age to do that, to sit there and turn pages and then find treasures like that.
And by the way, just for the record, there is no asterisk next to Roger Maris's name. You know, it's just, but this was when baseball really, you know, ruled the world in terms of being a national pastime. You know, people had these debates, and I said, well, you know, I'm sure every bar in America had a copy of the Baseball Encyclopedia because people had, there's a way you basically answer disputes. Simple as that.
And settled bets.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, what year did the Houston Colt 45s become the Houston Astros, and how come? That kind of stuff. I mean, you find it in the book. Yes, you have to dig a little bit for it. You couldn't just Google it. You just had to look at the book and say, okay, what was the first year of the Houston Astros? Yeah, and there were all sorts of little nuggets along the way. I mean, one time I remember we were working on one of the books in the 80s, and we came across a mistake. Because we had our own database of checks and balances of box scores, and we came across a fellow named Lou Proctor, who in 1912 had played a game for the St. Louis Browns. Now, even back in those days, like a Moonlight Graham, it was rare to have a guy just come up for one game and disappear. So we started to check on this, and we worked with Sabre, and sure enough, we found out that Lou Proctor was not, in fact, a major league player for the St. Louis Browns. In fact, he was the telegraph operator working the game, and he was basically transmitting all the starting lineups for the game that day with the Browns and their opponent. And somehow his name got into the lineup for the St. Louis Browns. And his name stayed in the Baseball Encyclopedia for, golly, 60, 70 years. And so he finally said, no, this doesn't make any sense. Obviously, it's a mistake. And we expunged him. But that was the kind of stuff we worked on all the time. I mean, how do you even research that? Because, you know, back in the day, there must have been six papers covering baseball in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Or what do you do when you go go through the six, because newspapers are everywhere, and there were a lot of them. You know, some guy, they didn't have official scores all the time. So some of the guys would score something as an error. The other guys would score as a hit. Well, you have to go through all that stuff to figure out how the Baseball Encyclopedia is going to mark it up.
Was Baseball Encyclopedia ever on a CD or DVD?
No.
So the only way to get this is, at this point, probably go to a good used bookstore or look for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can find one on eBay, and that, of course, is the irony, you probably find the book. The only place you find the book for sale would be on the computer, which basically was the death knell for the book. But if you can ever get a copy, gee whiz, it is just a treasured item. I mean, you remember in the movie Field of Dreams, there's a scene out in the cornfields of Iowa where James Earl Jones is sitting in some rafters, some stands out there, and sure enough, he's holding a copy of the Baseball Encyclopedia because he's trying to try to see who's coming out, Shoeless Joe, and all the rest of them. So it's just a piece of Americana that, unfortunately, as time marches on, it becomes a little more forgotten. But again, for my generation, and certainly for your generation, it was just, you must have. Every baseball fan had a copy of the Baseball Encyclopedia.
Well, hopefully someone has thought to put one copy of these things in a time capsule for future generations to find.
Yeah, because I think that would be splendid, because people would look at it and marvel at it and say, what is this? And look at these batting averages. And maybe a time comes where batting average doesn't exist anymore. It's just taken up by other equations that are more popular. But it's just, again, I just can't tell you how many calls and letters I've received over the years, and this is true, from people who say, you know, I spent a good chunk of my childhood, particularly over the course of the winter or rainy days in the spring, just curled up, just going through the Baseball Encyclopedia, looking at guys' numbers, look at their nicknames, where they grew up. I mean, just your imagination would run wild, because that was what it was. I mean, it was that's how the book was all about. And there's no photos, no nothing. It's
nope.
Just numbers.
Just numbers. And that's the way a lot of baseball fans like it. We were talking with Rick Wolf, who, in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Baseball Encyclopedia. Rick, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure, Ron. It's always fun to talk about one of the greatest books, at least in my mind, ever published.
And that was our conversation with Rick Wolf. Tune in again next time when we'll have another fascinating guest from the world of baseball literature and pop culture. And remember, if you have any questions or concerns or suggestions, please drop them to me at ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf@gmail.com. And visit the site ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf.com for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews on the game we love. Talk to you next time, everybody.
Pitching that fader so grand, he'd have said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a